hazel, with variations of green and gold depending on the angle I tip the dagger to, letting the light shift and reflect off my iris. Like every color of every season. Gasping, I drop the blade. He says my name, voice deep and demanding my attention. Jovi. He takes a small, measured step toward me. Cautious, like I'm a wild animal who will dart at the first sign of danger. You've known all this time, I accuse, spinning on him. That's why I can see into your mind and no one else's. It wasn't a question, but he nods anyway.
Yes.
Horror replaces my blood with ice. Can you see inside mine too? He doesn't reply, but the answer is clear as day on his face. Oh my gods! I try and fail to recall every thought I've had about him for the weeks we've been together.
It's not as easy for me to see inside your head, he clarifies, eyes imploring mine. Your mind is strong. Aside from a moment ago, I've only been able to see inside when you're drawing.
I can't dwell on what he must have seen just now, knowing it contained a vision of us with nothing but air between us.
I think...
He hesitates before deciding to continue.
I think that's when your mind is the most free.
The last time I sketched anything was back in Alaha, the day after I cried myself to sleep. I spent the morning in bed, inspecting my journals, all my years, documented in sketch form. He knew, and hid it from me. Why didn't you tell me?
I didn't know how you'd take it, given what you went through with Kai. I thought it might be better for you to feel it after your awakening.
I shake my head. Feel what? He watches me with rapt intention when he says,
The tether.
Like a bolt of awareness spearing through me, I know in an instant what he's referring to. The pull I've felt since the morning I awoke in the bedroom at Fia's. The relentless desire to be near him, to touch him. Like a strand drawn taut with tension between us. I shake my head. There are too many thoughts and not enough time to sort through them. Not with Aker's presence drawing me in like a moth to a flame. I need to think. It's an obvious statement to make, but he understands, receding back a step. He sits on the arm of the chair, disappointment clouding his features before he's able to tuck it away. He calls for one of the guards from outside.
Please escort Princess Jovinia to her billet.
He instructs the soldier, tone solid and steady. It's careful and put on, like he's protecting himself from me. I can't differentiate if it's the tether that reveals that to me, or if it's because I've grown to know him well enough to see past the facade he sometimes wears. As I follow the soldier out, Aker nods at me.
Good night, Jovi.
Chapter 37. I awake to the midday hustle and bustle of camp with my stomach demanding to be fed. I ask the soldier stationed outside my tent what the fuss is about, but all I get in return is a blank stare. My first instinct is to find Aker. It's a thought before I even realize it's there, the tether more prominent than ever. It tugs below my breastbone. I look south, in the direction it wants me to go, and turn in the opposite direction. I don't know where Messer is, but it'd be nice to have an internal compass that leads to him instead. I amble through the camp until I spot soldiers with food in their hands and follow the trail back to an open-air kitchen. There's a line, but I'm hesitant to join in. Unwelcome stares and turned backs greet me, but I spent the better part of my life secluded in the far reaches of Alaha. I've been gossiped about and shamed for being an outsider, and I sure as hell am not going to let history repeat itself. Plus, I'm hungry. I step into place despite the glowers. The line is long, but it seems to move quickly. The man in front of me looks over his shoulder as if offended. I'm determined to not let them affect me. So I smile at the soldier, only for him to turn back around without returning the gesture. Rude. It's quite the spectacle, Bo says, sidling up next to me. If the men behind me have an issue with her cutting in, they don't voice it. What is? She's smiling, but her eyes never stop roving, absorbing as she peruses the comings and goings of the camp.
seeing them nervous around someone other than me for once. I think you're confusing outright disdain with nerves. She laughs, and the soldier before us looks over once again, this time to be met with Beau's disarming smile in place of mine. It stuns him, eyes growing wide as a flush fills the high points of his cheeks, and he hurries to turn back around once again. Trust me when I say they're bluffing. We shuffle forward in line. And how are you able to discern such things? I ask casually. I see auras, she says. Like colors? She waves a hand in the air, causing the metal loops around her shoulders to clink together. Sometimes it's colors, sometimes it's vibrations. There's not any record of anyone having this gift before, so there's no name for it. I just call it an aura because it's the easiest for others to understand. I nod like it makes sense to me, but it doesn't. I don't want to scare her off. It's our turn to receive our rations, and I'm pleasantly surprised to find it's pulled pork with a honeyed biscuit. There's a water station nearby, and Beau fills her water skin from the barrel. She offers to share with me. We find an overturned log to sit on while we eat, a little away from the camp's center. Despite my hunger, I can't stomach more than half my portion before setting it down. Beau nudges me with her shoulder. Ask me anything, she says, sensing my apprehension. Or seeing it, I suppose. She presents a believable picture of an open book. It's either because she feels like she has to be one, considering what she's able to discern from everyone around her, or because she just doesn't perceive boundaries the same way the rest of us do. Last night, I say, unsure if I even want to know, you saw something between Acre and me. There's a curiosity in the way she tilts her head to look at me. The majority of human interactions I see are benign. There's not a lot of overlap between friends or acquaintances, or, say, someone you bump into in passing. But if there's a strong emotion emanating from one or both people, it can flare in their aura. You're saying you saw Acre's aura flare? More than that, she says with a glint in her eyes. I saw it merge with yours. Her description makes it feel very intrusive. Acre's aura has always had a subdued quality to it. He has such acute colors with hardly any blemishes or waver to them, but they've always been muted, like viewing them through frosted glass, she explains. That is, until last night, when I saw the connection between the two of you. You two are most definitely fated. I don't know what any of that means. What is it about the bond that unsettles you? Truthfully, I'm sick of having no say in my life. There's release in finally voicing my thoughts out loud, in telling someone of the bitterness that has been eating away at me over time. But you do, she says, smiling at me like I'm silly. A matching bond is just that, a bond. It doesn't dictate anything you feel or do. She throws a hand out in front of her. Pretend the bond doesn't exist if you'd prefer. Don't the colors, or whatever, reveal all truths or something? It doesn't work like that because humans don't work like that. I'm growing frustrated with the lack of well-defined answers. I can tell you Acre feels a great affection for you, if that's what you want to hear, she says half-heartedly with a shrug. I can tell you he adores you and is proud you're his match, but it doesn't solve your real concern now, does it? I can't discern if she's being sincere or not. While the majority of me wishes for those things to be true, they don't appease the anxiety gnawing at my insides. What is it you see when you look at me? Her smile is equal parts empathetic and pitying. I'd be doing you a disservice by telling you. I'm somehow not surprised by her refusal to answer. Human emotions are fickle, Joe. Yours, mine, Acre's. They're nothing but a wave in the ocean. What really matters is what you decide to do with them. As quick as she imparts those words of wisdom, she points to my half-eaten breakfast and asks, Are you going to eat that? I huff out a breath of laughter and shake my head. It's all yours. We sit and watch the men as they meander about. She talks of how they're scared of me, but there's a noticeable unease when they see Beau, They don't look anywhere near as uncomfortable when Acre walks through the camp. Two soldiers, braver than all the others, sneak glances at us as they walk by. It's a different sort of attention, but not any less menacing, especially when they break into laughter once we're out of earshot. "What was that about?" I ask her. She leans in close.
"When it comes to men, Joe, it's best to just assume the worst."
Well, that's not reassuring. Raised voices begin to carry over the regular chatter of the men like a tidal wave over the camp, growing in volume before crashing through the soldiers around us in uproar. Men reach for their armor and weapons while others forgo them altogether and simply make a run for it. South. They're running south. Without speaking, Bo and I take off at a sprint. I ready my blade at my side. Bo's two steps ahead, metal rope coiling in hand as she darts between the tents. She's fast. So fast, I struggle to keep up. I'm out of shape from the weeks at sea, not to mention the drain of my awakening and the dark forest ordeal. I'm panting by the time we make it to the commotion. Bo steps through the line of bodies standing on the outskirts of camp. The hillside dips, giving a wide view of the border. There are no clear markings to show where one land ends and the next begins, as on a map, but there are two men on horseback turning away from Kenta and back toward Roysen, lowering their white flag as they retreat. Acre watches them go. As he marches back up the hillside to the waiting band of soldiers, the wind lashes at his hair and clothes, and it only serves to outline the strength in his build. As if he can feel the appreciation in my gaze, his head whips up, eyes locking on mine. Acre is my match. The finality of that statement sends a spark through my chest. I can't tell which emotion takes precedence, fear or excitement. Both war inside me. He speaks with Rango, Hallis, and a couple of other men I don't recognize before dismissing the band of gathered soldiers. I can't tell if the consensus amongst those departing is one of relief or disappointment. I spot a few sour faces. Acre's stare lands on me as he approaches.
"That was Jorgen, Sven's father," he says. "When Sven never returned home from the tavern after that day we left, he suspected Sven had learned of a bounty on our heads and come after us."
"Did you tell him?" He nods, remorseful.
"He's upset, understandably. I promised to have the remains returned to him."
"It's a big risk to send a man into Roysen just to give a grieving father solace," Bo comments.
"I owe his wife a life debt of saving Joey's life," he explains. "It's the least I can do."
Bo shakes her head, looking toward the border.
"I'll leave you to decide which man you're sentencing to death."
"I have to send a scouting team regardless, so it's neither here nor there,"
Acre says, scrubbing a hand along his jaw.
"Jorgen warned of a spreading rumor. The people are of the belief that we, Kenta, have destroyed the Dark Forest in order to get unfettered access to their border."
"You have been openly distributing men all along the boundary," Bo says. "What else are they to expect?"
"It's a lose-lose situation,"
Hallis butts in.
"If we don't move our men, it leaves us vulnerable."
Bo doesn't seem pacified by this assessment.
"It's only a matter of time before Chris sends his own troops this way,"
he continues, looking at Bo.
"The number of men he sends will determine if we need to remain passive or actively on the defense."
Messer's voice cuts in from behind me.
"I'll go."
I turn and find him looking better than I've ever seen him before. His hair and skin have a glow to them that enhances his appearance. The shock of it sort of takes my breath away for a moment. If the girls back in Alaha thought he was handsome before, they'd be dying to see him now that he's on land. When I look back at Acre, he's not looking at Messer. He's looking at me, but drags his attention away when I catch his eye. If he's surprised by Messer's offer, he doesn't show it.
"Are you sure?"
Hallis asks.
"Roysen is littered with deserters and bounty hunters, on top of their ever-moving military." "I know the danger,"
Messer says, smile turning teasing.
"Consider it a step toward building that trust Acre is so keen on developing."
Acre nods once.
"You're better equipped to go undetected than anybody we can send. Could you be ready to go by nightfall?"
Hands clamp onto my shoulders, and I suppress the knee-jerk reaction to flinch.
Messer gives me a squeeze, and I realize he's baiting Aker, testing his reaction. Another squeeze.
I'm at your disposal,
Messer says. Aker isn't dumb. He knows Messer's playing with him. He looks up from the fingers Messer is drumming against my clavicle with a renewed sharpness.
Great. You can start by retrieving the carcass.
All eyes fly toward the skeletal remnants of the dark forest in the distance and the blur of scavengers circling overhead.
If you hurry, you might beat the maggots.
He smarts. Hallis's grin mirrors his friend's.
Can't say the same for the smell, however.
Undeterred, Messer gives me another little shake before releasing me.
Do me a favor, would ya?
He says, eyes overflowing with glee.
Yeah. Sure.
I drag out. He strips out of his shirt and hands it to me.
Hold these for me. I don't want the smell of rotting flesh to soil them before I head out on my death quest.
He doesn't give me a chance to respond before undoing his pants and jerking them down. I avert my eyes, face coloring with embarrassment. I feel more than see him place his trousers on top of the shirt in my open hand. Careful to keep my eyes above his chest, I glare at him. Not funny. Neither the stripping nor the joke about his possible imminent demise. On the contrary, Beau says, smiling from ear to ear. I find him rather hilarious. He basks in her compliment, winking at me a moment before he sprouts wings, snapping into the familiar form of blue in the blink of an eye. He shoots into the sky, a smattering of black feathers raining down behind him. A nearby soldier shouts his dismay, unintelligible but clearly horrified about the Eon, and I can't help but smile at the fact that they are all so stupidly frightened about so many things, even though they're supposed to be big, bad warriors. Beau and I share a knowing smile. Chapter 38. Any nerves I have evaporate at the sight of Aker's easy grin. He strokes the neck of the mare he's holding the reins of, eyes bright as I draw near. There's a peaceful quality to him today. It reminds me of our time on the boat. Everything was simpler when it was just the two of us. Even so, distrust lingers in me from constantly being left in the dark. Where are the other horses? Beau says, eyeing the two before us. Aker holds his hand out to help me onto the horse.
The battalion needs as much muscle as they can to break camp.
She narrows her eyes at Aker. Then I'm riding with Joe. But he's already pulling himself onto the blanket behind me.
Alice and I won't fit together. It is what it is, Beau,
he says.
I don't make the rules.
Gritting her teeth, she all but stomps over to Alice, who's smirking like the devil he is. You do, she says, slapping away Alice's offer of a helping hand. It's your monarchical sovereignty. You literally make the rules. I know her plight all too well. Being frustrated by the orders given by sons under their father's sovereign rule. Once she is situated on the horse, Hallis leans forward, lips a hair's breadth away from her ear, and says,
I promise I won't bite.
Oh, yeah? She bristles, elbowing him in the ribs. I might. His smile becomes more of a grimace as he rubs the tender spot with his hand.
It's going to be a long 3 days.
I dare a look at Aker over my shoulder, and his eyes fall to meet mine. The anger I've been harboring dims at the sight of him so close. From the line of his brow to his full lips, I'm entranced by his beauty.
I hate it, especially his smell, like crisp air and woods with a hint of something sweet. Are you ready?
He says, eyes roving over me, assessing. Am I? It's hard to see past the thought of spending the next 3 days on this horse with him, but when I stop and focus, excitement buzzes inside me. There's hope that whatever lies before me is better than what lies behind me. I think so. He smiles, a hint of teeth peeking through.
Good. Every princess should know how to properly ride a horse.
He takes my hand and places the reins in my palm, tightening his grip on my wrist briefly before letting go. A small act of encouragement, but there's a sensual edge to it, a slow glide of his fingertips from my skin. Or maybe it's just all in my head.
Show me what you've learned,
he says. I shake my head. I can't.
You paid attention when we left the healers,
he says.
Every time I tightened or pulled on the reins, you made note of it. I saw you. You can do this.
I stare at the leather straps in my grasp, unsure of what to do. I was just staring at your hands, I say, the truth escaping my mouth before I realize. He leans to the side so he can get a better look at my face.
You what?
I can't stop the blush from stinging my cheeks, and I shrug. You have nice hands. His smile grows until it's pure brass, and I roll my eyes, knowing I've just started something I'm never going to hear the end of. Bo speaks under her breath, but it carries with the wind. It's going to be a very, very long trip. Aker is gracious enough to let it go, for now, and gives me basic instructions on how to steer a horse, when to tighten the reins, and when to give slack and adjust across the neck. The camp is now a quarter of the size it was when we arrived, just a handful of tents huddled in the large area of flattened and muddied earth. Aker lifts a hand in farewell to the soldiers who remain. We descend the hill and move up to the next crest, where Aker instructs me to tug the reins low, stopping us. Hallis lets out a low whistle. Below us, trees without leaves and white as bone stretch as far as the eye can see. The exposed forest floor looks like snow, a blanket of bright ash, like a pale birthmark marring the earth, a stark contrast to the rich, dark colors of the woods and grass surrounding it. A forest, once dark, now light.
You did that,
Aker says, voice low, as if he's speaking to himself. The magnitude of it hits me like a physical blow. I sink further in the saddle, my weight supported by Aker's chest as I come to grips with the power that's been tingling in my fingertips for days now. Without another word, we depart in the opposite direction. With the enemy at our backs, we kick off into a canter, whipping across the grassland in a way we couldn't through Royson's wooded valley. Aker keeps my hands in his as he helps me lead the horse. As we get further away from the border, I remind myself that Messer will meet us at the palace in a fortnight, that he will survive. We keep the swift pace for the better half of the day, until we're forced to slow by the changing terrain, descending from grassland into a rocky ravine speckled with boulders. It creates a bottleneck effect, and Bo and Hallis are forced to ride behind us. The horse does most of the work by herself, but Aker's hands stay tight on mine as I hold the reins, legs tense as we traverse the uneven ground. Trees shroud this crack in the earth, casting shadows over us. It's a nice reprieve from the heat. Bo's voice distorts as it reverberates off the winding cliffside, followed by Hallis's deeper tone.
What do you think they're arguing about?
Aker says, voice rough from the hours of unuse. Breathing? He chuckles softly.
They've been like this since they were kids. I should probably feel worse than I do about pairing them together.
So why did you?
Sadistic pleasure,
he says, not the least bit repentant.
But really, I just wanted you with me.
I don't know how to reply to his confession, so I don't, but I note the sharp sensation his words elicit.
To the left,
he directs, showing me how to position the reins to steer the horse to the left of a downed tree branch. Bo's voice carries over the sound of the horse's hooves on the rocks, a sharp insult ending their bickering, punctuating the resounding silence that follows.
Okay, I feel a little terrible,
he says. I snicker. No, you don't. After a few moments of quiet, he says,
you're no longer angry with me?
It comes out more like a question. I let out a breath. I don't know. I don't feel angry until I think about it. Then it burns that he kept the truth from me. But I can see his reasoning. I try to imagine him revealing our bond to me during different points of our situation, and I can't find one where my reaction would have been any different. I'm fairly certain it would have been worse, actually. The best I can do is garner more information. When did you know? I ask.
Honestly, I think I knew when we were kids,
he says,
surprising me.
You always had these big emotions as a young girl, and...
He stops to gather his thoughts, to figure out how to describe them. He lets go of the reins, and I turn enough to see him place his palm to his chest.
I swore I could feel them.
His eyes are alight with a memory. His description makes me sad. For the girl he's speaking of, a girl I don't know. And for the boy who thought he lost his match. He doesn't return his hand to the reins, letting it rest where our thighs meet instead.
But I knew for sure when I placed your hand on the stone wall. I felt your magic then, and I knew it matched with mine. Any remaining doubts disappeared when I started to see into your mind, when you were drawing in your hammock on the ship back to Alaha.
I sketched a lot of the same thing during the trip back from the market. The blade. Over and over and over, until I got back, when my obsession switched from the inanimate object to him. You saw me drawing my memory of you from the market, I say.
You seemed to struggle getting my lips just right,
he says, teasing me. I roll my eyes to mask my mild embarrassment. Can you control the visions?
No. I've tried to get in while you're not drawing, with no luck,
he says.
You?
I can get out, but I don't have much of a choice as to when I get pulled in. I debate what to reveal to him, but I suppose it's best to go ahead and get it all out in the open at this point. I think physical contact heightens the connection. He takes a deep breath.
The matching bond is cloaked in mystery, because it's so rare. Throughout the centuries, the bloodlines between heirs have become diluted. While magic has become more frequent amongst the commoners, the spread has weakened the potency of the magic overall, lessening the likelihood of matches being made. There are so few who have it, and those who do keep it under lock and key. The bond brings certain advantages people wouldn't want divulged to their enemies. But there is someone who may give us some answers in the capital. For a price, that is.
In Alaha, they made it seem like it was chosen, like a marriage pact.
There are tales of matches being common, once upon a time, but they were never chosen. That's something Ren twisted to further control his people and to ensure the right bloodlines continue.
We scrape by a wall of stone, misshapen and jutting from the hillside, and we duck to avoid a low overhang. The passage is narrow. Our legs bear the brunt of the squeeze at the tightest section before we're through. Then, my breath stalls in my chest at the sight before us. We're in a shadow valley filled with purple flowers, the stalks tall enough to reach our calves, even as high as we are mounted on the horse. The fragrance I've been catching on the breeze for miles quadruples in potency. Can we? Before I'm done asking, Aker has dismounted, landing on his feet in one smooth motion. I follow suit, a tad less gracefully. Careful as I step between the flowers, I brush my fingers across the petals, relishing their silky texture. The tallest reach my waist now that I'm on the ground. Bees and other insects fly to and fro, buzzing by without concern for the giant stepping into their domain. As I get further and further into the valley, it opens up on one side, revealing a view of rolling green hills that transform into mountains in the distance, white-capped and jagged as they point to the sky. The world, bigger than I ever could have imagined. It's breathtaking. Moisture coats my eyelashes as I try to take in every detail. The swishing of grass turns my attention to Aker as he approaches. He holds up a parcel of food, water skin in his other hand.
Figured we could eat while we rest, he says.
Over his shoulder, I spot Bo and Hallis breaching the rock overpass, both with sour faces. Aker sees them too and tugs me to the ground with him, finger pressed to his lips. Hidden from sight, we hear them arguing over who's riding in the back for the rest of the trip. Bo asks where we are, which Hallis must ignore because silence follows until we hear Bo tell Hallis to eat shit when he asks for a share of her lunch. Aker and I snicker. He lies on his side, torso propped up on an elbow, and hands me the food wrapped in wax paper. I fold my legs underneath me and unwrap the... I gasp at the cut red berries and cheese. I haven't had strawberries in years, I say as I pick up a slice.
The tartness of the fruit overwhelms my taste buds, and I eat a sliver of cheese to combat it. Where did you get these? Aker picks a berry from the bunch, pops it in his mouth, and chews.
Bartered with a soldier. His mother is an earth elemental and sends him the best care packages.
Lucky him.
Lucky us,
he says, taking more. We savor the shared meal and take turns swigging water. My eyes go to the mountains in the distance. I'm amazed by how clearly you can tell the temperature difference between there and here just by looking. I've never felt snow. He follows my line of sight.
You did as a child. Meili is just beyond those mountains.
It seems so far away and yet so close at the same time. I shove the cap back on the water, and when I look up, I find Aker staring at me, eyes like molten ore. It feels intentional as he continues to observe me from mere feet away. Will you put your nose ring back in? I say to break the intensity. I don't know if it's polite to ask, but he doesn't seem surprised or offended by my question.
Do you think I should?
I shrug, pretending to be impartial. He smiles, but it doesn't quite reach his eyes.
Maybe I will.
I know we shouldn't waste daylight, but I move to lie next to him, and he extends his arm for me to use as a pillow without a word passing between us. I roll onto my side so I can look up at him. He does the same, mirroring my position. My cheek is propped against his forearm, his other arm draped over the curve of my waist. This is how we slept on the boat. But it somehow feels more intimate on dry land. Maybe it's just because I'm aware of the matching bond. Or maybe it's because there's plenty of space around us, and we don't need to be huddled so close together anymore, yet here we are. I touch the spot where the V lies underneath his shirt. You, Hallis, and three more? There's a look in his eyes I can't decipher, a heat that's in direct contradiction to our conversation.
You can count,
he says, playfully pinching me in the side. I manage to shove Aker's hand away from my ribs, but instead of fighting back, he spears his fingers through mine, interweaving them together between us. His plan all along, no doubt. We fall into silence, letting the buzzing of bees and cradle of flowers create a private cocoon around us. There's still so much unsaid, but none of it feels important right now. I can't recall the last time I felt more at peace. There's a small voice trying to break through the haze, trying to remind me of all he's withheld from me, but I shove it away. It's not until I feel Aker's fingers threading through my hair that I realize I've dozed off.
You've got to be kidding me! Get up!
Hallis barks, face lined with frustration, so much so I'm halfway convinced he's never experienced joy in his life. Ever.
Good gods,
Aker rumbles, squinting up at his friend through his own sleepiness.
Half a day of sharing a horse and you're already cracking. If you two weren't busy napping, you would have noticed the change in weather.
As if on cue, the sky falls on us. Rain pours down despite the sun shining from behind nearby white clouds, and we jump up to make a run for cover, aiming for the trees toward the bottom of the valley. Hallis cuts in the opposite direction, helping Bo get the horses. It's a futile attempt to avoid getting soaked. Evident in the grass and stray petals littering Aker's hair and skin, the fabric of his shirt clinging to his chest. He reaches out and plucks a leaf from my braid, holding it up for me to see, but I've only got eyes for him. He lets the leaf flutter to the ground between us. All I can think about is what the water dripping from his hair must taste like on his wet lips as he licks them. He takes a step closer, forcing me to tilt my head back to look at him.
Jovi,
he whispers, bringing his fingertips to my cheek. But the pounding of horse hooves forces us apart as Hallis and Bo get closer, looking even wetter than we are, and angry. Both of them.
It doesn't look like it's going to be easing up anytime soon,
Aker says, eyes lingering on me before looking toward them.
Let's go ahead and set up camp for the night. We'll get an early start in the morning.
It's very apparent Hallis is unhappy about the turn of events, but he's smart enough not to voice it. Not after Aker's remark about him cracking. Bo dismounts and wrings out her hair. Hallis needed a shower anyway. I swear I can almost hear Hallis's teeth grinding in irritation. Chapter 39.
I knew you were taking the long way around,
Hallis says, turning to Acre.
But setting up camp because of a little rain?
They're under the awning we strung between the trees. Rain continues to pound on top of the canvas, drowning out the crackling of the small fire, its light casting an orange glow over the space. Acre sits with his back to a tree, forearm braced over his knee as he fiddles with a blade. My blade, I realize, the black stone impervious to the firelight. Instinctively, I check my waistband, then remember I had it tucked under my bedroll. I look to the shelter Beau and I claimed for ourselves and see two figures sleeping across from each other. Beau to the right, myself to the left. I watch my chest rise and fall in a steady rhythm.
Her world has been turned on its side,
Acre says, drawing my attention back to his and Hallis's conversation. He looks up at Hallis, and I do my best to stay in the shadows, outside the ring of the light from the fire.
She could use an adjustment period.
I must be dreaming. It's the only explanation for how I'm in two places at once.
You're wasting time we don't have,
Hallis replies.
War is war, Acre says. A week's time won't make a difference.
Hallis's back is to me, but there's noticeable frustration in the way he shifts on his feet.
Come on, Ace, be real with me.
He throws a hand out between them.
What are you doing?
Acre holds Hallis's gaze for a long beat.
She lived in a hovel, Hallis. They kept her apart from the rest of them. Isolated her to make her rely on Ren's son as her only confidant, as her lover.
A look of barely concealed revulsion crosses his face.
She's been sheltered and conditioned to believe she's less than. The court will tear her apart before she even steps through the palace door. Don't feed me that bullshit,
Hallis says.
She's proven to be plenty capable enough to handle herself. You know better than most how cruel the court can be.
I do. Hallis agrees,
and she'll either adapt or...
Hallis stops mid-sentence, realization dawning.
You're scared she'll choose to return to Mei-Li to be with her mother.
Acre doesn't confirm or deny Hallis's suspicions, allowing the silence to speak for itself.
And you think making her fall in love with you will prevent her from leaving?
Acre stares at him with a calmness that would make any other man fear for his life.
Contrary to what you may believe in that overinflated head of yours, you don't know everything. I know what I saw,
Hallis says.
When you were about to kiss her, looking all lovesick.
The blade that was in Acre's fingers is now embedded in the bark of the tree behind Hallis, missing his jugular by millimeters. Acre's glare is downright murderous.
Shut your mouth. You missed,
Hallis says, not the least bit shaken by Acre's anger.
Has it occurred to you that I may have genuine feelings for her?
Acre continues, more subdued. Hallis sits on his bedroll across from him.
I know you do,
he says.
But I also think the guilt you've carried around for years, assuming she was dead, ties in with the responsibility her mother placed on your shoulders. And with the matching bond, it's muddled things.
Acre pulls the blade back to him and resumes spinning it between his fingers.
You're wrong.
They stare at each other for long moments before Hallis gives in.
Okay,
he relents, situating himself for the night, lying back with his arm covering his eyes.
If you insist. But a word of advice?
Acre lifts a brow, the perfect picture of disinterested boredom.
You should tell her before we get to the palace. There are no secrets in court, and I can't imagine her taking your betrothal to the Princess of Strau all that well.
His what? I take a step back, and I don't know how, but Acre clocks the movement out of the corner of his eye, head snapping toward me. Our eyes meet.
What is it?
Hallis says, already reaching for his sword at the foot of his bed. Acre shifts, and I take a step toward my sleeping body. Then I'm gasping as I sit up, head swimming as I come to, waking Beau in the process. Everything okay? She says. You look like you're going to be sick. My eyes shoot across the fire, toward Hallis and Acre's shelter, and I find them right where I saw them a mere moment ago, when I was on the other side of the fire. Then Acre's on his feet,
face equal parts shock and determination as he marches through the rain toward me. I scramble to stand.
When were you going to tell me about that nifty trick?
He demands, and I'm surprised by the venom in his voice. I'm instantly defensive.
Probably whenever you were going to tell me that you're betrothed,
I spit back.
Yikes!
Beau grabs her metal rope.
I'll just be over there,
she says as she sneaks past. Neither of us pay her any mind.
Tell me the truth, Jovinia.
That's maybe the most hurtful of all, him using my full name.
How long have you been able to do that?
Why should I? It's apparent you haven't actually been forthcoming with me, I counter.
Are you working with Ren?
I'm so taken aback by his question that I'm stunned into silence, mouth hanging open like a fish, baffled by his conclusion. When I do manage to find my voice, it's lacking the fire it had before. What are you talking about? Sensing my confusion, Aker releases a breath, nostrils flaring with a sharp exhale, eyes losing the hardness behind them, but not all of it.
You've spent the majority of your life in Alaha. Plenty of time for Ren to wrap your mind completely and place you at the market as bait, knowing I'd be there just like I have every year prior, and knowing I'd come to save you if I ever saw you. You very well could have been playing me for a fool this entire time.
Shaking my head, I throw my hands up in defeat. I'm not tricking you, Aker. I'm sure Beau can attest to the fact that I'm being honest. That's the reason she's here, isn't it? He has the wherewithal to at least look confused as his anger dissipates.
Then why were you eavesdropping? How were you able to do that?
I don't know! The last thing I remember is going to sleep, and then I was watching you and Hallis from your side of the camp. It was like my mind manifested itself somewhere else. Somewhere... I trail off, my voice losing its fire. Near you. It's too pathetic of a confession to be anything but true. Like a bucket of water has been dumped over his head, a wash of guilt and shame overcomes his whole being. Face and body going slack with the understanding that he just screwed up.
Jovi.
I hold up a hand to stop him. It's tinged with a faint yellow glow that I hurry to shake from my fingertips.
I've been betrothed to the Princess of Strau since I was 13.
He carries on talking, despite my refusal to listen.
But before that, it was you.
I feel out of control. Like a barrage of emotions are fighting for supremacy inside me, and I turn away from him to try and collect myself. When I don't respond, he continues.
That's why your family was visiting mine, when you went missing. You would come every summer to renew the alliance.
An alliance I'm assuming went sour after my disappearance. The Kenta, the only people who share a border with Roysen, an enemy with a lot of resources and the army to back it. It's easy to see why Kenta would be hungry to secure a beneficial agreement with another territory. When are you expected to marry? I say, facing him again but keeping my distance.
By the end of the summer,
he says, but he's quick to add,
but the wedding will be called off after we speak to my father.
You'll lose the alliance.
It doesn't matter,
he says, scrubbing a hand through his overgrown hair, throwing droplets of water all over the place.
You're my match.
He says it like the answer is simple. I don't know your customs, I say, fighting the blood wanting to crawl up my neck and into my face. I'm angry at myself, so naive and clueless about anything outside Alaha. Did you court her? He hesitates, but nods.
Since she turned of age, I've visited twice to establish a familiarity of sorts. Our families aren't close like yours and mine were, so I wanted to foster a friendship first.
To make her fall in love with you, I say, remembering the words Hallis used. He doesn't like the connection I've made.
Not necessarily, no.
But not necessarily either. The muscle in his jaw pops as he clenches his teeth at the accusation.
I have a nation of people depending on me to save them.
He stops. Head bowing before looking back up.
There's not a lot I wouldn't do to keep them safe.
I know he speaks the truth,
because he's already withheld so much from me to ensure that. I don't believe Aker wants to keep me in the dark for nefarious reasons. I believe his intentions are as close to good as they can get, but that doesn't mean it's enough, that his choices are justified. Who has the bigger army, Meili or Strau? Aker's eyes darken at my question.
It doesn't matter.
I demand an answer. Meili or Strau? He swallows.
Meili,
he says. My chest almost caves in from the realization. How convenient that you were able to procure a possible reason for Meili to rekindle their alliance with Kenta, an alliance that would come with a more dominant army, neatly secured by a matching bond. Jovi, he says, voice harsh as he closes the distance between us. I sidestep before he's able to reach me. Don't touch me! His hand closes into a tight fist.
Don't twist this around and make it something it's not.
I shake my head. I don't know what it is, Aker. This could all be a gimmick, a magical trick to emulate a matching bond, if such a thing even exists. He calls for Bo without looking away from me.
Come tell Jovi what you're able to read from me.
Like she's a reliable source, I say, sarcasm dripping from my tongue. You're her prince, her brother. She'd tell me whatever you wanted her to. This time, he doesn't let me escape when he reaches for me. Hands framing my neck, he angles my chin up as he brings his mouth down onto mine. I push against his chest, but he jerks me into his hold, hand gripping my jaw to stop me from pulling my head back. He bares his teeth against my mouth.
Stop fighting me.
His fingers pinch as they dig into my cheeks, and he seals his lips to mine again. This time, quick to dip his tongue inside my mouth as I open it to retort. Something embarrassing escapes my throat, a noise that's half moan and half protest as I taste him. Desire licks up my body like a flame on a struck match, turning any of my objections into the wind. The hands I was using to push him away moments ago now travel to his shoulders, to the nape of his neck. I use his broad shoulders as leverage to pull myself closer to him, pressing the length of my body into his. He sweeps his tongue in deeper, groaning as he devours me, and that's when it happens. Our magics, circling like two curious animals, touch for the first time. No, not the first. That was at the market, when my hand met the stone wall. But it's the first real introduction. Lit from within, I feel Aker's power intertwine with my own. I can feel his magic strength and reach. Every speck of metal within miles vibrates with my new awareness, in the trees and soil and deep underground. I can sense the denser metals of human making, like weapons and tools and Bo's coiling rope. All mine and Aker's to wield and bend and expand as we will. Tearing myself from the kiss, I shove Aker back, glowing hands searing through his shirt and marking his chest. He doesn't so much as bat an eyelid at the burn, breathing deep against the discomfort of being so suddenly pulled away. I feel it too, the yearning to reunite, to continue what we started. I don't trust you, I say, struggling to catch my breath.
I don't need you to,
he says, scrubbing a hand across his mouth.
I just need you to trust yourself.
He turns toward the fire, but spins back just as quickly. I hold my ground as he comes close again, eyes blazing mad.
Mark my words, if I ever see him again, I'll kill him for what he's done to you.
There's no clarification needed. I know he's speaking of Kai. He believes I have trust issues from the years of Kai manipulating me. Then he stalks to his shelter and strips off his singed shirt. He says something to Bo, and she shakes her head. I call my blade, knowing I'll sleep with it on me from now on. Aker retrieves an intact shirt from his pack, roughly pushing each arm into the sleeves before scooping it over his head, covering the two handprints marking his chest. He looks at me for a moment, before kicking dirt onto the fire and pitching us into near darkness, the only illumination now coming from the slight glow of my skin. Chapter 40.
We should come to a small village by the end of the day, if we keep up the pace, with the outskirts of the capital only another day of riding beyond that,
Hallis says.
If we're lucky, we might be sleeping in a real bed this time tomorrow night.
I can't lie. The thought of an actual bed sounds borderline euphoric after the lack of sleep I've experienced the past few nights. I toss and turn ceaselessly, desperate for unconsciousness to take me under, but I can't escape memories of the events of projecting myself outside of my body, arguing with Aker, him accusing me of working with Ren. And the kiss. Gods, that kiss. Aker sits with Bo at his back, and I realize it's a much less intimate riding arrangement, but probably uncomfortable for all involved. When it was time to depart from camp, I made the rash decision to ride with Hallis. There was a noticeable pause where Hallis and Bo awaited Aker's reaction, but if they were expecting something significant, they were disappointed when all he did was adjust the halter on his mare and help Bo onto his horse. I've yet to relax against Hallis's front.
You chose this, Hallis says, exasperated.
I pretend to not understand what he means. Chose what? I can almost hear him rolling his eyes.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Antagonizing me when I'm already teetering on the edge of volatility is not a smart move on his part. I decide remaining silent is the best plan of action. For his safety, of course. The handprints seared on Aker's chest are a clear indication of what I'm capable of when pushed. I still can't make heads or tails of the fight. After overhearing his conversation, it somehow got turned back on me. His suspicions, Bo's close observation of me, all of it sheds new light on the situation. And while I know there's genuine merit to what Aker accused me of, secretly being an ally of Ren, it doesn't change that it hurt me. Maybe hurt isn't the right word for how I feel. Maybe it's more along the lines of disappointment. Disbelief that he's betrothed to another. Frustration with my own naivete for not seeing the writing on the wall. It's not a stretch to think that Aker could very well be manipulating me for his own personal gain. His vow to kill Kai rang with utter conviction. Although, I don't know what he would gain from killing Kai. There wasn't an ounce of reservation in his words. It will happen, whether I want it to or not. Aker spared Kai's life once for me, and he's made it clear he won't do it again. We keep a steady pace the rest of the day. The temperature mellows as the sun dips toward the horizon, and the wind carries a waft of sea salt every so often, telling me we're not far from the coastline. We come across a narrow creek our mare becomes skittish when crossing, so Hallis has to take the reins from me. He weaves the leather straps between the fingers of his remaining hand, using each digit to steer the horse with fine-tuned motions. It's impressive, especially since I can't even do it with two hands. We're halfway across the waterway when Hallis speaks, voice low in my ear.
See, you're not the only one who is displeased with our riding arrangement.
I don't dare look up to see whatever it is that prompted him to make that statement, but I can feel Aker's attention on us. It burns like the sun itself. I keep my focus locked on Hallis's deft handling of the reins, noting how he squeezes the horse with his legs to guide her through her fear. The weight of Aker's stare doesn't let up until we're back on dry land.
If looks could kill,
Hallis mutters, a hint of amusement in his voice.
If you find me dead in the morning, you know where to look.
I find myself smiling in turn. Aker isn't who you should fear. I've contemplated your death more than Aker ever has, I promise you. Hallis's body goes taut behind me.
Excuse me?
Does the name Fang Hands ring a bell?
Fang Hands, he repeats with a hint of recognition. The story I used to scare you with when we were children?
I nod, and his body relaxes once again.
Aker said you don't have any memories from your life before Alaha.
I've dreamt of some, but it's fuzzy. I regained the darling memory of Fang Hands after a particularly bad Saigon route trip. My stomach churns at the memory.
That must have been
terrifying, I finish for him.
I am so sorry, he says with an undercurrent of genuine sincerity. For what it's worth, I've had my own experiences with Saigon. I woke up naked on the dinner table at my grandmother's house with her homemade jam smeared in unsavory places.
I'm stunned by his admission. I didn't take Hallis to be the type to divulge much at all, let alone anything that humiliating. Your poor grandmother.
Hey!
He feigns offense. It's not that bad of a sight to wake up to.
That only serves to make me laugh, and I'm still smiling when I make eye contact with Acre. The look on his face takes me by surprise, so much so that my laughter dies in my throat. I was expecting the blank stare he's carefully kept in place all day, not the soft crinkle of a hidden smile in his eyes before he looks away.
He told me you overheard our conversation.
When I don't say anything, Hallis continues.
I may have said some things that could paint Acre in an unfair light.
It didn't do him any favors, that's for sure.
It's nothing I shouldn't have already suspected. He's loyal to a fault. A dangerous fault. The kind where he'd risk life and limb without a second thought if it would save someone he cares about. Save his people.
Hallis shifts behind me, and I get the sense he's uncomfortable discussing his friend like this, especially with someone he doesn't trust.
There are only two categories of people as far as Acre is concerned. Those he's loyal to, and nearly everyone else. And trust me when I say you never want to be in the last category.
And where does the Strahl princess fall in this equation?
I think that answer is up to you.
I can find little difference between him courting her for political gain and what Kai did to me.
If you can't see the difference, then I'm not going to be able to convince you otherwise. You're allowed to hate Acre all you want, princess, but you don't need to make-believe him into the bad guy to do it.
Is that what I've been doing? Has there ever been such a thing? I ask. For a matched couple not to end up together?
There have been tales,
Hallis says. And?
They ended up destroying one another, along with everyone else around them.
Well then. Chapter 41. The dirt path we've been following turns to cobblestone as we approach one of the two entrances into the town. Stone walls encircle the entire settlement, and guards stand outside, checking the papers of anyone who enters. Hallis has dismounted and leads the horse with a loose rein, the stump of his shorn hand hidden in his pocket.
This is Calgary, the first line of defense between the capital and the Royson border. The town's been ransacked a time or two, so they're particular about who gets through the gates.
Acre has pulled his hood over his face. We've all hidden our weapons, my blade secretly tucked away in my waistband. When I asked why we needed to hide our identities, Hallis said it was to prevent the prince's presence from causing a ruckus among the townspeople. They don't get to see the royals outside the capital's walls very often, and it usually creates a maelstrom of bodies. Remaining hidden prevents word of our location from spreading. To Royson, too.
Papers.
A guard calls when we approach. It's obvious we're not their typical visitors. The quality of the horses and gear and our clothing gives away our high status in an area filled with farmers and serfs.
We have no papers, but we have coins to spend,
Acre says, shaking his fist to rattle the metal before exposing his palm. The men lean in to get a better view, sharing a quick look before the leader shakes his head, feigning regret.
The cost for passage has increased. Tripled, in fact.
Tripled?
Hallis barks in outrage.
Pay or go around. There's been word of a light wielder at the border. Some girl who's been rumored to look a lot like one of the two you're toting around,
he says, pointing at Beau and me with a dirty finger.
And we don't want no trouble in our town.
Acre digs three more gold coins from his pocket.
Is this enough?
He asks. Words clipped in annoyance.
For you two,
the guard says to Hallis and Acre,
the girls will be an additional fee.
You've got to be fucking kidding me, Hallis all but shouts. This is extortion. Does your lord know about this?
Lord Gravebriar is in the tavern if you'd like a word with him regarding our practices,
the guard says, beard twitching when he smiles.
But first, you'll need to pay.
Acre retrieves enough coins to buy an entire plot of land and slaps them into the man's hand.
They better have good ale.
The men shuffle out of the way so we can pass, smiling like the thieves they are and sharing silent laughs at our expense. Once we're out of hearing range, Hallis pulls in close to Acre.
How much is left? Not a lot,
he replies. The town branches off from the center, like spokes on a wheel, an old well as the centerpiece, where stray chickens and children are congregated. We dismount from our horses.
We need to split up,
Acre says, handing Hallis half of what's left of the money.
I'll find a stable for the horses. You three go check for lodging and something to eat that doesn't look like it'll give us a bout of food poisoning. Not happening.
Hallis stops him with a hand on his shoulder, head tilting in our direction.
Take one and I'll take the other.
Excuse me? Beau butts in. Do we not get a say? Acre lets out a breath, eyes going to me, an offering for me to choose. I'll go with Hallis. Beau isn't put out by my decision in the slightest and all but skips to take the reins from him. Acre tells us to meet back here in an hour, pointing to the clock tower at the northern end of the central plaza before we depart. The buildings are old and worn down, brick facades crumbling and broken windows covered with boards. Many of the signs aren't legible due to weather and neglect, but we manage to find an inn with relative ease thanks to the vacancy sign in the window. The doorway is propped open with a chair, and we enter a small parlor. It's empty of patrons, besides one lone man sitting in a booth in the corner, a glass of dark liquor on the table before him. There's a bar near the stairs, with an elderly woman behind it scribbling something into a notebook.
We don't serve for another hour, she says,
not bothering to look up from her book.
How much for two rooms?
Hallis asks.
Papers?
Not this bullshit again, Hallis mutters. How much without papers?
She looks over the brim of her reading glasses, eyes skimming over us with sharp dexterity.
For the two of you and no papers?
She says, eyeing us up and down once more.
3 silvers each.
Hallis assesses our funds and makes a face as he slaps all of it on the bar.
This is all I've got.
She fingers through the array of coins before sliding them into her palm and pocketing them in her apron.
No violence or excessive drunkenness allowed. Keep it clean. Shared bathroom at the end of the hall on the right.
Producing 2 sets of keys, she holds them with one in each hand. Sounds reasonable enough. Either of them have separate beds? She smiles at me and shakes the one in her right hand. Hallis and I reach for the key at the same time, but I'm successful in grabbing it first. The number 4 is etched into its key ring. Hallis takes the other, less than thrilled by the prospect of sharing a bed with someone. There are only a few options as to who will get the pleasure of doing so, and I think we both know it won't be me.
Name your price,
Hallis says as we leave the inn. There's not a thing you could offer me that would suffice, I tell him, tucking the key into the front of my blouse. We return to the well near the clock tower before Acre and Beau. Hallis spends the entire wait pouting, which is the best version of him, in my opinion, because it means he doesn't talk and avoids eye contact. The town reminds me of the main in Alaha, but seedier. There's a bakery and a shoe shop near the middle, and a tavern down the way. People carry packages wrapped in twine and paper from a nearby alley where the butcher resides. There are couples and families and men, but I haven't spotted a single woman out by herself, which is the most telling thing. Darkness envelops the town as the sun sinks behind the stone perimeter wall. Hallis? He grunts in reply, and I point to the lanterns lining the street to draw his full attention. Why aren't they lit? He remains quiet as he considers the lamps, and I look at him to double-check that he's not still ignoring me. But Beau and Acre appear before he's able to answer.
The whole town is crooked,
Beau complains.
How much do we have?
Hallis asks. Acre shakes his head, the only answer needed.
If I'm going to bed on an empty stomach, Beau says, at least tell me there's running water where we're staying.
Hallis and I share a look, and Beau groans at the lack of optimism radiating from us. We follow Hallis back to the inn. If Beau or Acre are off-put by the lack of light along the way, they don't show it. Patrons line the dark alleyway as we pass by, and it seems the business has picked up since we were last here. A woman stands by the door, greeting people as they enter, and... is she wearing a negligee?
Hallis halts, the first of us to get a look inside the bustling establishment. He peers up at the dilapidated sign over the door. Bo peeks her head over Hallis's shoulder and wheezes.
You booked us rooms in a brothel?
She smacks him on the shoulder. Hallis's gaze goes to Aker, the last in our group.
I didn't know, he tells him, apologetic. It was empty when we were here earlier, and the lady who took our money was not...
He makes a face before looking to me for backup. When I don't offer any, he says,
she was not a lady of pleasure, if you get what I'm saying.
Aker sighs.
There's not a chance in hell we're getting the money back.
All eyes go to me, and it's obvious they're waiting for my reaction. I look to Aker to gauge his preference. Then Bo says,
he doesn't mind a brothel, do you, Aker?
He clenches his teeth, but manages to keep his annoyance under control.
If you are uncomfortable, we'll go,
he tells me.
None of us are strangers to sleeping on the ground. Another night of it won't kill us, and we'll be at the palace by nightfall tomorrow anyway.
But the money is already spent, and it's too dark to set up a decent camp. Plus, I'm exhausted. It's fine. Let's just get some sleep. There's a noticeable sigh of relief from Bo and Hallis, and I wonder if they have any idea how alike they are. Hallis is first to enter, and the lady at the door welcomes him with a smile and slow graze of her fingers along his forearm. He nods at her, the Kenta greeting, and passes by with curt politeness.
Ooh.
She does a shimmy at the sight of Bo and me, the scraps of fabric she wears as clothing barely hanging on.
I love women who are in touch with themselves. Maybe one of you could touch me later, too.
She winks at me as I pass, her thickly painted lashes accentuating the gesture.
Or maybe both of you.
Aker follows close behind, hand at the small of my back as we enter.
She definitely has a preference,
he whispers in my ear, sending chills down my spine with his proximity. The parlor is filled with men and scantily clad women. Perfume and liquor permeate the air. Everywhere I look, there's a woman trying to draw me in, their clothes and hair and makeup all a ploy to entice.